Case is number 21-1759, Atlanta Gaslight Company against Bennett Regulator Guards, Incorporated. Mr. Mitchell.
Good morning. Thank you. And may it please the court. I'm Josh Mitchell for the appellant AGLC. After quite a lot of litigation, this court affirmed the board's finding that the 029 patent is unpatentable, and it told the board to quantify a sanction. The board used that collateral sanctions issue to terminate the IPR and seek to nullify this court's judgment. We explained in our briefing why we think that no sanction is warranted, but this morning I'd like to focus on why termination, including vacator of the final written decision, can't be the correct sanction. There's two main reasons for that. Number one, it flouts the mandate rule, and number two, the board didn't justify it with regard to either the harm or the conduct at issue here. In fact, the board even rejected Bennett's requested monetary sanction as excessive before imposing the even harsher sanction of termination. So, Your Honors, the most obvious reason that termination can't be appropriate is that it flouts the mandate rule. The parties fully litigated this case to a final judgment in this court in Bennett 2, which affirmed the board's unpatentability finding. The remand order here was, we think, quite narrow. It was to quantify the sanction.
Judge Stoll, I have a question for you on this. One thing I'm puzzled about is the Supreme Court was very clear and quick to call that we lack jurisdiction to review determinations relating to time bar, right? And the board did not make its determination solely to deinstitute in this case, did not make it solely based on a sanction. They said another thing they were considering is the change in policy with respect to the time bar. And it's very clear that we can't review determinations relating to time bar. The Supreme Court sent this case back to us, and we knew that we could not judge the time bar, so we assessed the validity of the claims. But we didn't say anything about the time bar because we can't, frankly. It's very clear that we lack jurisdiction to do that. So how can our mandate preclude reconsideration of an issue that we don't even have jurisdiction to consider?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important to remember that the board terminated here as a sanction, and so the statutory language appears to be pretty clear that this court has jurisdiction to review final decisions of the board, including sanctions decisions. I mean, this court in Gerritsen versus Shirai and Ornstein versus Citrix Systems
Counsel, are you taking the position that the board did not consider that it was terminating? I mean, that it was changing, I guess, terminating or deinstituting the inter-parties review based on the change in policy in the PTO that it expressed in its briefing before the Supreme Court in Thrive? Are you saying that that's not even part of the board's decision? Instead, the board's decision is solely for a sanction?
Yes, I think that's got to be correct, Your Honor. The board's order was expressed as an order terminating the judgment as a sanction.
Language it says where it says it's a evaluation of multiple considerations. This is on page 7, appendix page 7. These considerations include assessment of where this case stands in light of the RPI and time bar issues. The development of both the law and office policy on those issues over the course of the proceeding and our appraisal of patent owner's specific monetary request as a quantification of the sanction. So I don't understand at all, to be honest with you, how you can say that the board's decision wasn't based, at least in part, on its determination that the case was time barred.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that is a correct view of the way that the court or that the board assessed the sanctions decision. But on page 10 of the order, the board expressly imposes vacator of the institution decision and final written decision and termination of the proceeding as a sanction. It appears to, at least to me, to be quite clear that it's saying that it quote operates as a sufficient sanction.
Also confirming this decision to current office policy. You've cross-quoted
right
there. And so that current office policy isn't referring to a sanction. It's referring to time bar. I think it would be unfair to read it differently.
Well, Your Honor, I agree that one of the considerations that the board took into account when it you know, crafted the sanction here is the belated change in policy on the time bar question.
Do you agree that the time bar is on and off switch on institution? You know, you can't kind of institute or not institute based on the time bar. It's either you institute or you don't. There's either a time bar or there's not, right?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. But you know, even taking into account that there's less than clear guidance from the Supreme Court on what falls within the 314D bar, the judicial economy considerations that led Congress to take institutions off of the table for appellate review are completely reversed here, where we have a completed litigation before the board. You know, the Supreme Court reiterated those policy concerns in Click to Call itself. It said that the AIA's focus is on efficient resolution of patentability above compliance concerns, and so courts and the board shouldn't be in the business of wasting resources spent resolving patentability and leaving bad patents enforceable. And you know, if what the board did here were allowed to stand because it sort of pretextually used a collateral sanctions decision to gut this board's decision, you would be completely contravening those concerns.
I could see. Now, let's talk. It sounds like you're talking shenanigans now.
Yes.
And I can see where if shenanigans had occurred, that could be something that could prompt our ability to review.
Mm-hmm.
So, but do you think that shenanigans consideration is limited to a petition for writ of mandamus? Because I believe we have a case that says it is.
Your Honor, I don't believe it is. So the Quoso opinion specifically says that shenanigans, quote-unquote shenanigans, would be reviewable under 319 or the APA. And certainly we believe that mandamus would be appropriate here to the extent that the court doesn't believe it has jurisdiction to review this decision. But we think that's you know, that it's unnecessary to reach mandamus because at least to us, it appears that the court has pretty clear jurisdiction to review this as a sanctions decision.
Do you think you preserved the issue of mandamus? Because I'm looking, I think you raised it in footnote 2 on page 28 at the end of your reply brief. I think that might be too late.
Your Honor, this court, of course, has discretion to reject our attempt to preserve that. We raised it in response to a jurisdictional argument that Bennett presented for the first time in its opposition brief. You know, we certainly think that the court would be justified in even sua sponte entertaining mandamus in this circumstance to protect its mandate.
So is it your view that any time the board, let's set aside the time bar for a minute. Is it your view that any time the board would issue a deinstitution decision based on conduct that led it to think sanctions should be awarded, that is automatically shenanigans, or just that we have the jurisdiction to review such a deinstitution decision for other reasons?
No, I think the point here is that the board's deinstitution decision in this case is plainly, I mean, again, to us it appears to be plainly a sanctions award. It was done in the context of a remand solely to quantify sanctions or to reconsider the sanctions decision entirely. So the board had that very narrow scope, and in its termination order, it appears at least to us to have done this as a sanction. Because it is a sanction under 1295A4A, it's a final decision of the board, and this court has jurisdiction to review it full stop.
What if I disagree with you? Let's assume hypothetically, I disagree with you, and I actually think that this decision is based on additionally a time bomb. Then do I have jurisdiction to consider it?
I believe, I mean, yes, in that circumstance, I think it would be a shenanigan, Your Honor. And so I think that would be reviewable either under the APA or under 319, as Quoso talked about, or under a writ of mandamus, whether, you know, as part of our request or sua sponte to protect the court mandate.
Why do I have jurisdiction, given the Supreme Court's very clear guidance in Click to Call?
Because it's a situation where this court has already affirmed the board's final written decision, and so what the board is doing is in effect completely flooding this court's mandate. I mean, so imagine that the board had instead of doing what it did, if you'd sent this back and the board had said we disagree with the Federal Circuit's ruling on patentability here, and therefore we're going to vacate this final written decision and deinstitute the proceeding. Obviously, that would not
clearly
be allowable.
That's shenanigans. Clearly, that is shenanigans.
Right.
Right. That's not what happened here.
But this is the same result, Your Honor. What you end up with is a patent that is in this sort of suspended state of Schrodinger's cat patentability, where you know maybe it's patentable, maybe it's not. But you know, and what we also have is a judgment of this court that no longer has any force or effect.
I understand what you're saying, but that happens sometimes, you know. Let's go back to where we were before. You had the PTO saying that the patent was invalid, and then you had us saying that it shouldn't have been instituted because there was a time bar, right? I understand it's a little different because you've got appellate review now, but there's times when, you know, if there's a time bar and it was wrongly decided initially, you can end up with a scenario with a Schrodinger's cat patent as you're referring to.
Yes, Your Honor, but the issue here is that you have an appellate mandate that has to trump the decision of the Patent Trial and Appeal Board.
I mean, that's back to my question, counsel, which is how can our mandate preclude reconsideration of the time bar when we don't have jurisdiction to consider that issue? We don't. The case went from the Supreme Court to us and then to the PTO. The PTO was the first ones to be able to consider that issue following the Supreme Court's decision, because we can't consider it.
Your Honor,
please respond if there is a response.
Yeah, Your Honor, we believe that the court had imposed a very narrow scope on its remand mandate. It decided the patentability question finally, and then remanded it solely for sanctions, and the board then purported to use that sanctions decision to reconsider issues that were simply outside the scope of any remand.
Counsel, would you take another minute or two to discuss this point? I am extremely troubled by the PTAB, by the board deciding that they're going to vacate and ignore a final decision of the Federal Circuit, and I appreciate that's your point. Is there anything that you might say to elaborate?
Sure, Your Honor. You know, the reading that the board advances that essentially says, takes this brief phrase that you know, that they were allowed to reconsider the sanctions question in its entirety, that essentially converts the Bennett 2 decision entirely into an advisory opinion, and obviously that can't be the case. This court doesn't need to say when it issues a remand to a lower tribunal, by the way, this is not an advisory opinion. You know, as a result, you know, the board is limited in what it can do on remand, and it doesn't get to redecide its institution decision once this court has affirmed the final written decision.
Yes, I must say that's what I always thought was the law. We'll see where this takes us. Let's hear from the other side.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Porter?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, this is Wayne Porter on behalf of Bennett Regulator Guards.
Okay, well, you see, the thing that's troubling me is that what authorizes an administrative agency faced with a final decision of the federal court assigned review of that agency to say, never mind, we don't like what you said, we're going to ignore it, we're going to vacate it.
Well, certainly that's the normal case, but this is not the normal case. In this situation, the Court of Appeals expressly authorized the board to reconsider both termination and monetary sanctions as
a remedy. No, we authorized review of sanctions. We didn't say, by the way, you can ignore our decision.
Well, I think it's implicit to say if you can reconsider termination as a remedy, that is what that means, especially...
We didn't say that. We said you can reconsider sanctions.
Well,
isn't that right?
Well, not so limited. No, it expressly said that the court was the sanctions order was sort of an entire ruling that included both termination and monetary awards.
Well, they were talking about attorney's fees, costs, to say as a sanction you can vacate the decision of your appellate tribunal. I think it's hard to say that is the implied correct reading of that remand.
There's some gloss on this. You have to remember that this court dealt with this issue before. The court already knew that the statute of limitations had been violated and, in fact, remanded with instructions to dismiss the IPR. The only reason that the merits argument came up was because the Court of Appeals was forced to do it, not because the statute of limitations argument was wrong, but simply because of the subsequent decision in Thrive regarding appealability. So
your point is, this is Judge Lurie, is that we determined that the board should on remand consider in a single decision and address the entire motion for sanctions, which requested both termination and compensatory sanctions. And are you saying that authorized the board to terminate if it so determined that was appropriate?
Absolutely. The board did nothing but, in effect, institute an outcome that this court itself had previously done in Bennett 1. So there was no off-the-reservation kind of arguments or action here. I mean, the court had to know when it remanded.
It has to be off the reservation. It's never happened. Of the hundreds of appeals that we've taken from the board, for them to say, never mind, we're not bound by what the Federal Circuit says. It doesn't matter that they took a particular action on particular patents that were properly taken to us on appeal. We're going to vacate that.
Of all those hundreds of cases that you referenced, I'll bet there are none of them like this, where...
That I agree with.
Okay. Well, this is a clear exception to any particular rule, I would say.
That's all right. Hey, I just wanted to confirm, just so I remember correctly, in our decision on the merits in looking at the validity of the claims, we affirmed the board's decision, didn't we?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I would like to address the appeal from the sanctions rule issue. And the idea that Atlanta Gas is really appealing a sanctions issue and not sort of a deinstitution decision as such. What we have here is an analogous situation to Thrive. In the Thrive opinion, Hook-to-Call argued that it was not really appealing an institution decision, but it was appealing a final written decision, which it was permitted to do. The Supreme Court shot that down and said, Hook-to-Call's contention remains essentially that the agency should have refused to institute inter partes review, and, as explained, Section 314D makes that contention unreviewable. So we have a very analogous situation here where Atlanta Gas is saying, oh, we're not appealing an institution decision, we're appealing a sanctions order. But I would say for the same reason that the Supreme Court advanced in Thrive, and you can find this in Part 5 of the opinion at page 140 Supreme Court 1377, I would think the situation is analogous.
But the problem is, if we go your way, we are invalidating, we are essentially invalidating a decision that we have made.
That's correct. And I think it's proper and just that that occur. This court recognized that the whole proceeding was in violation of the time bar. So by remanding it with the authority for the board to consider termination, it enabled the board to correct this injustice.
Let me ask you a question of general law. My understanding of the system, the judicial system, was that when there is a final decision of a court based on what's brought to them to decide, that, and then the law later changes, that nonetheless, when there's a final decision and there's a mandate, that case is over, that you can't start all over again because for one reason or another, let's say some unrelated reason, the law has changed. So isn't that how the system works?
Not exactly correct. There's precedent for if there are parts of a case outstanding, then it's not finally concluded. It's not entirely concluded. And I'd cite Marconi Wireless versus U.S. 1, at page 47. That's a Supreme Court case in 1947. Mendenhall versus Barbara Green, 26, Fed 3rd, 1573, at pages 1581 and 82. That's a Federal Circuit case from 1994. And I should also add that Section 318B, which requires the director to issue a certificate upon completion of the proceeding, that certificate has not been issued because the proceeding is not final.
Well, all right. So to pursue this to this case, here we have a decision of the Federal Circuit. And what's happened here is that an administrative agency from whom that decision was an appeal says, never mind, things have changed. We're going to vacate your decision, Federal Circuit, because for whatever reason. That's what's happened here, is it not?
Well, it's more than whatever reason. The reason is it was remanded by this court with the knowledge that the thing was time barred and that a proper remedy, as it had imposed itself earlier, was to deinstitute the proceeding and terminate.
It was remanded with instructions to reconsider sanctions, or not to reconsider, because they hadn't been considered in the first place. That was an explicit remand, was it not?
No, I think what the board said is, the court said, was on remand, the board may, at its discretion, further consider its order given the outcome of this appeal. And a few sentences earlier in the opinion, the court acknowledged that the sanctions order addressed both termination and compensatory expenses, and it refused to separate them into separate parts.
But we did say, given the outcome of this appeal, which was our final decision on the merits of the appeal.
Yes. Well, seems to me there's an explanation for that. It's very logical. The outcome of the appeal is to, because of the Supreme Court's decision in Thrive, not permit a time-barred IPR to be deinstituted, which the court had previously ordered. So the outcome of the appeal is Bennett is going to have its patent invalidated in a proceeding that was unlawfully instituted, and the court was aware of that.
Counsel, you're saying that we have to make a distinction between authorizing the Patent Office to invalidate a decision of its reviewing court and authorizing the PTO to deinstitute a case which it believed should not have been instituted.
If I understand you correctly, I think that's right. It's like a number of other cases that have been remanded to the board, and the board made a decision at that point to deinstitute the whole proceeding.
And you're saying we authorized it?
Yes. I think it's an exact, it's the literal language of the remand instructions.
Difficult case.
Certainly an unusual case.
So on your theory, the whole proceeding before the PTAB now as if it never occurred, and therefore the issues of validity go back to the district court?
In this particular situation, there is no pending district court action. But yes, let me just say this. The Section 315B, on which all of this is based, was intended by Congress as a protection for patentees. So, if there's no IPR because the petitioner decided to file too late, that doesn't, you know, their rights are really not affected because they can assert their defenses in a district court action if there is one. So, it's not like Atlanta Gas has lost the ability to contest the patent in the future if necessary.
So that, no, I agree with that, and that's certainly the idea. The difference here is that we have a final decision of the on appeal on the substantive merits of the issue, the patentability issue, and the Federal Circuit has not vacated its decision. The administrative agency has undertaken to do that, and that seems a bit unusual.
Well, I guess so, but I would also say this. There are cases that say, in appropriate circumstances, an appellate court can withdraw its own mandate to prevent injustice.
But that's not what happened.
No, but it's certainly a possible resolution, and it's not not unheard of.
I don't recall that was requested of the Federal Circuit to withdraw its mandate.
No, because I argued in our brief that's not necessary.
Because the administrative agency said, never mind, we're not going to pay any attention to what you decided.
No, not because of that. It's because this court authorized the administrative agency to do that.
Counsel, this is Judge Stoll. I'm having a hard time understanding what the basis would be for us to vacate our own decision when we don't have jurisdiction to consider the time bar issue.
I agree.
Okay.
May I finish?
No, please continue. Please finish your talk.
Thank you. If I understand it correctly, the the court at this point does not have jurisdiction to review the institution order, and therefore, under Section 314D, should dismiss the appeal.
I understand that. My problem is that you were having a colloquy with my colleague, Judge Newman, about how we could vacate our own decision. And I was saying I don't understand how we could do that, given that we don't have jurisdiction to consider the time bar issue.
I guess it's unnecessary is the way I would put it. Once the case is properly back to the board, I don't think the board has to act within the sanctions ambit anyway. The Supreme Court has held that the board has the inherent authority to institute or deinstitute a proceeding. There's no requirement that the court proceed with it in IPR. And any institution decisions that are made are simply just not available for, they're final, not available for review. I mean, you could argue that what happened here is the board made a deinstitution decision, and under the reading of the statute and as it's been interpreted, that is a final and non-appealable order.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Porter.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, any more questions for Mr. Porter?
No.
All right, Mr. Mitchell, you have your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, Judge Newman, you're exactly right. The sanctions issue is completely collateral to the merits here, and the merits were fully decided. This court's decision affirming a board decision could never be final because the board could always award sanctions if the board's reading were correct here. And that just isn't the law. This court is a court of review, and it gets to review the board's decisions. It's not the other way around. Second, I think it's plain that Bennett has now conceded that what the board did is not consistent with this court's mandate. It's asking this court to withdraw its own mandate so that it can conform that mandate to the decision of the board. That, again, is getting the law precisely backwards. That turns the board into a court of review over this court. And third, there are two possible readings of the remand letting the board reconsider sanctions. The first reading, which is the reading that AGLC advances, is that you can reconsider whether sanctions are appropriate at all. The outcome of the appeal, which the board was supposed to consider, it vindicated AGLC's challenge to the 29 patent. It's an unpatentable patent. The reading that the board and Bennett advance is that the board could reconsider whether it wants to follow this court's decision. That would render this court's decision advisory, as I said in our main argument. That just can't be a correct reading. Thank you, Your Honors. If there are no further questions, we'll ask the court to reverse.
Any more questions for Mr. Mitchell?
No.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you.